father, the American dream, Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes was one of the greatest performers in the history of our business.
I am the hit maker, the record breaker.
I have wined and dined with kings and queens, and I've slept in alleys and dined on pork and beans.
Long live the American dream. Long live Dusty Rhodes.
Hello, welcome everyone. Welcome to another episode of As the Heel Turns. I'm your host, Alexander K. Lee, a.k.a. Big Al. Joining me as always, the most handsome man in the professional wrestling podcast world, Connor Dorian.
How's it going, everybody?
And star of the Pop and Joe show and this show, Dario Pop Passarelli.
Hey!
Now,
that was my Fonzie impression. Hey!
You got to do a Mike Gentile there and go like, okay, for those of you who don't know, Fonzie was a character from a show called Happy Days in the 1970s.
About the 1950s.
And was once the coolest human being on the planet Earth.
That's right.
Much like Dario Pop Passarelli once was.
Still is. In both cases.
In both cases. So you're at least still in the top five.
Back to wrestling.
Back to wrestling and back to our introduction. As I think everyone knows by now, the American Dream, professional wrestling legend, Dusty Rhodes, passed away last week at the age of 69 years old due to complications from a fall resulting in his home. It's a sad, you know, very sad story. He let it, but it's weird. It's one of those things you're sad about, but anytime a celebrity or a professional wrestler passes away like him, who's so vibrant, it's always a good time to celebrate their lives, especially him who always carried himself with such positivity. Dario, I'll defer to you right now. What are some of your thoughts on Dusty and his passing?
Well, I think one of the things is I probably had the earliest connection to Dusty than either of you two did. But my first connection with Dusty was not on a positive side. My first awareness of Dusty Rhodes was when he was in the WWF at the time as what I used to, and in a not-so-nice manner, call him Pokeroo. And again, that's a reference to another kid show of the 70s called The Polka Dot Door, where there's a somebody dressed up in a costume of, I have no idea what the heck it was.
I'm going to have a bunch of footnotes on the episode page. Don't worry about that.
But them called Pokeroo. And the reason being was that he wore the purple and yellow polka dots. And I thought that was the ugliest and stupidest. Mind you, as a kid, I didn't understand what the word gimmick was. But I just didn't think that that looked cool at all.
Yeah, sadly, as a kid, that was also my first introduction to Dusty Rhodes. And I did not understand what the big deal was about him. You know, I had no eyes. I was growing up, I knew nothing about the NWA, nothing about his past as a world champion before that. I just, as you said, saw Goof and Polka Dots with Sapphire, who, again, I didn't know who she was. They
brought
her out of nowhere.
Yep.
And then my later experience with him was in ECW. And I still didn't understand the context, even, you know, getting a little more educated as a fan. I still didn't understand, like, why is this old Southern fat dude in this cool, sexy wrestling promotion?
And
I didn't understand it.
And you have to say it that way. And, you know, we always talk about this in terms of the Divas division and in terms of, you know, whether we should or should not talk about certain parts and how they look as part of their, I guess, wrestling ability or talent. I'm not even sure how to say that properly. But with Dusty, you're right. I mean, he was fat. He was ugly. I don't think you can say it any other way. But God, did he captivate the people who were watching him in that ring.
I think that was really the point of his character, to be kind of that way, because he was able to relate to everyone in the crowd. Not to say all the people are fat, but he'd be like, hey, this is one of our guys.
He's one of us.
He's the American Dream.
Yeah, and I think in terms of going back to, like you said, it took a while to actually understand. He's just a common man.
Yep.
Yeah, just a common man and so influential. Again, it's one of those things where I say, oh, I don't get the appeal of Dusty until you realize you watch some of his old promos, some of his old matches, some of the ways he conducted himself. And you're like, oh, a ton of the guys that I like did stuff that he innovated it. So for me to say that I don't like Dusty Rhodes is insane, because it's not true. I like a lot of things he does. I just didn't know Dusty had invented them.
You've seen it through modern day wrestlers.
Yes.
Exactly.
Connor, so we were talking before the show that you might not be that familiar with Dusty, but I'm sure you remember his interactions with Goldust and Cody, his involvement in that storyline. Did you enjoy that kind of thing?
Yeah, I always like when you see the parents come in, like when Million Dollar Man came in with his son. I can't remember his name right now.
DiBiase, yep.
Yeah. And then Orton's father comes out, and I always liked the interaction with the generations. But yeah, I never really had any late memories of Dusty because I was so young at the time he was around. So my first really introduction to him was through Goldust and through Cody, or Stardust as he likes to be called now.
The one thing that I have is what I learned more and more as I became familiar with who Dusty Rhodes is not so much his in-ring persona, which, you know, is obviously cataloged, but what he did behind the scenes, how influential he was. He was a booker more than just a wrestler. And I'm not sure if he was one of the first wrestlers to become a booker in that regard. It's one of the first that I've heard of it. But he did have a mind for how to promote this business. He did have a passion for this business. And yes, anytime anybody becomes a promoter, you're always going to have infighting, backfighting, especially if you are a wrestler on that card. Then everything you do, every decision that you make is going to be looked at in different ways. But yes, he was responsible for some of the better promotions that are out there. Again, going back into the NWA days. And finding out more and more in terms of how he contributed to the business outside of the ring was phenomenal for me to learn about.
He was also a big part of the business throughout his later years, too. He was with NXT. He was big influences all the young superstars coming up. And he's definitely going to be missed. That's an understatement.
Yeah. I want to get to one of the things I do remember about him. And again, as I was saying, I learned more about him through DVDs and clips. And, you know, the WWE, they always do a great job of archiving things and, you know, never letting these old memories go away. So, you know, good on them for that. And one of what I consider, even though I wasn't there at the time, but now I've watched this promo so many times that I really can understand and really put myself in the shoes of the fans who listen to this promo live. The Hard Times promo, the infamous Hard Times promo.
Yes.
He's had many great promos in his day. Hard Times for me is the consummate wrestling promo. I consider it the greatest wrestling promo of all time. But at the very least, it's certainly the blueprint for any good wrestling promo. We'll play it now quickly, and then we'll have a little bit discussion after about why it's so appealing. Again, I like that, you know, all three of us come from different generations, so let's see how we all have a read on it.
Here's the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty, your fans welcome you back, man.
First of all, I would like to thank the many, many fans throughout this country that wrote cards and letters to Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, while I was down. Secondly, I want to thank Jim Crockett Promotions for waiting and taking the time, because I know how important it was. Starrcade 85, it is to the wrestling fans, it is to Jim Crockett Promotions. And Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, with that wait, got what I wanted. Ric Flair, the world's heavyweight champion. I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about Ric Flair. No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got four or five kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard times. That's hard times. And Ric Flair, you put hard times on this country by taking Dusty Rhodes out. That's hard times. And we all had hard times together. I admit I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My belly's just a little big. My hand is just a little big. But brother, I am bad and they know I'm bad. And there were two bad people. One was John Wayne, and he's dead, brother. And the other one's right here. Nature Boy Ric Flair. The world's heavyweight title belongs to these people. I'm going to reach out right now. I want you at home to know my hand is touching your hand for this gathering of the biggest body of people in this country, in this universe, all over the world. Now, reach it out. Because the love that was given me, and this time I will repay you now, because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion on this Hard Time Blues Dusty Rhodes Tour 85. And Ric Flair, Nature Boy,
Let me leave you with this. One way to hurt Ric Flair is to take what he cherishes more than anything in the world. That's the world's heavyweight title. I'm gonna take it. I've been there twice. This time when I take it, Daddy, I'm gonna take it for you. Let's gather for it. Don't let me down now, because I came back for you, for that man up there that died 10, 12 years ago and never got the opportunity to see a real Wolf champion. And I'm proud of you, and thank God I have you. And I love you. Love you!
Okay. Now, I want to explain first why it's important that we play the whole clip. It's that promo is like a good song. And it is actually the length of like a song you might hear in the radio. It's about 3.5 minutes. It hits every aspect of what you need to know about Dusty Rhodes and the man he was feuding with at the time, Ric Flair. And Dario was saying, to provide some background, what happened was Ric Flair and his cronies, the Four Horsemen, had at some point attacked
his cronies. No.
Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson.
You do not use the word cronies when referring to the Four Horsemen.
Oh, but I did. And they had injured his knee and put him out of work. And in a brilliant bit of simple storytelling, Dusty Rhodes compares his own struggles to the struggles of America. This isn't just a wrestling match. He talks not just about America and about the working man. He mentions the universe. He mentions how this match is relevant to the universe. Two guys grappling in a ring. And somehow he just makes it sound like it's the most important thing in the world. And to the fan base at the time, it probably was. And that's how you get people to buy tickets. And that's how you get butts in seats. So that's I just love that promo. I think it's perfect. Dario?
Oh, I have to agree in terms of the promo itself. I mean, one of the greatest things that I found in terms of the announcer introduced him and then just held the mic. I'm not sure if he realized what was going on, but it was like, you know what? This is a freight train that's coming down and I am just going to get out of the way and just let him roll with it. And again, he tugs at the heartstrings. Obviously, he makes that connection with the people. And he not only makes that connection, he emphasizes it by stating, you know, I'm going to reach out and you know, you can almost touch his hand through the television set. And I'm sure as a kid, you would probably reach out and try and touch his hand so that you can help him beat the bad, bad Ric Flair.
Yeah, he needs us. He needs us. If he's going to become the champion, he needs us to help him.
And he's doing it for us. And I just felt that, I forgot what year it was. I was 85. So it was after the Rockies, but I'm just thinking, like, you know what? Every Rocky movie is based on something like that.
Yep.
You know?
It's a timeless story.
Fighting for something bigger than what you
are. Definitely. Most definitely. Some of his individual lines are so hilarious. His lines about the fact... It's like a Bruce Springsteen song. I joke about this all the time. It's like he's a Bruce Springsteen song. Oh, the factory closed down. This is for all those people who the factory's closed down. Connor, you're a younger man. This was a different time period. But do you see what I'm talking about here?
Oh, absolutely. I see what you're talking about. Yeah. It has everything you want in a good promo. It has... He was ad-libbing the whole thing, which is always good. He can't tell if it's scripted or not. He was connecting with the people, like you're saying. People want to reach out to the screen. Had humorous spots, like Alex said. It has everything that you want in a promo. And he was the master at cutting a good promo.
And I think when we watched the Paul Heyman interview on Stone Cold, I think the one thing that had it more than anything else is that Dusty never forgot that promo wasn't about making him to be out good. That promo wasn't about making Ric Flair to be good. That promo was and always has been about putting butts in seats for the upcoming match. And that did that more so than anything else. And I think that's the important part about the promo, is that it built up the story so much that, yes, it did want you or make you want to buy a ticket to go watch that show.
It's such a departure from some of the modern promos that we see today that are overly scripted, that are designed like, you know, there's jokes clearly written in there to be funny and supposedly entertain.
I like to call those vignettes.
Vignettes, sure, anything. We saw last week with Dolph Ziggler doing some hilarious stand-up trying to cut up Kane. Kane's a tool. So that's something about Kane being a tool.
Was that sarcasm?
It was a little bit. It was a light sarcasm.
That was a fake laugh, by the way.
I think it was... Oh, no, that was real. Okay, we're not going to get the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Tickets. I won't be buying tickets to Dolph Ziggler's stand-up show anytime if that material is reflective of his
gigs. Only if Lana's there.
Unless Lana is there, which point I'll be the
first one. Is this gimmick as old as the joke? Is that where we're going
I'm
with this?
I'm sorry I brought it up. But my point is, I wish they would give some of these guys more freedom. Let them sink or swim. I know that can be disastrous, and I'm sure there are situations that we've seen on TV that I just can't remember where they did clearly give someone free rein and they just, you know, just petered out.
I think with every Paul Heyman promo.
Oh, yeah. That's a guy for sure. They just give him like 2 or 3 points. Touch these points.
Yeah.
Say it however you want, and he's a master.
And I think that Kevin Owens is kind of the same
yep,
way.
Kevin Owens, John Cena, both.
But I see kind of like a parallel between him and Dusty in a mm-hmm. small way.
Very
like
much
he's
so.
Talking about his family. He's talking about his troubles trying to get through the business and stuff, and I think he learned from Dusty.
Yeah, Connor, that's an excellent point. Yep.
Except his is more whiny intentionally.
Yes.
Shall we move on to Money in the Bank then?
Do we have to?
I think we should. Whoa, what does that mean?
I thought it was my job to be negative.
All it right, started sorry. Off with a I'll loving to tribute Dario. To Dusty. Well, no, there was a tribute was mid-show. It started off with a 10-bell salute to Dusty Rhodes.
Yes. And it was very nice for all the wrestlers to be out there standing side by side by literally those who they're going to be wrestling that night. Yep. This was, I think, a moment that deserved that. And you have to pay your respects.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I don't have a problem with that sort of thing being broken in that situation. But after they paid their respects, it led to, right away, the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Why start off with that?
Because they did.
Good answer, Alex.
I'm not talking about your executive decision, which you didn't consult Connor or myself on, in terms of starting off that match. I'm saying, why did the WWE start off ladder match? It's not like it was a technical or logistical reason that they had to bring down a cage or something like that. So why start off with the Money in the Bank match? Anybody?
My thought of it was, what match are you going to put first? There wasn't really any other big matches. You're not going to throw the main event first. You're not going to throw the Kevin Owens, John Cena. What else was left? The tag team match.
Tag team champions.
Yeah. I think the Money in the Bank was a better start than a tag team or a Divas match.
And the other thing is, I think they wanted to keep the two ladder matches as far apart as possible, which still didn't work, by the way. I still felt like there was two ladder matches and they were too close together, even though they couldn't have
put them any further
them
apart.
More, yeah.
Well, that was the reason because the first one ended at 9 and the second one started at 10:15. So it wasn't much time between.
Yeah, so that's why.
The only reason I came up with was to tease the fact that the winner of the Money in the Bank match might make appearance later
sure,
on that
always,
show.
Yes. Oh, that's the thing. You always want to have that intrigue. We were talking before. I keep saying that. We do a lot of talking before the show. Here's the secret. I'm breaking our character here. We do a lot of talking before the show.
No, we do a lot of talking, period. Just sometimes it crosses over into the wrestling. And this is a shout out to all our fans out there. We don't do this intentionally to rub you. It's not like we're having secret conversations.
No.
You are joining us in this conversation, even though we can't hear you, so speak up a little bit. But you are part of this conversation. And Connor and I don't feel like alienating you, just mm-hmm. like Alex does all the time.
Yeah. Look, you're getting all the good stuff. That's what I'm saying.
Alex
you don't even want to know.
Definitely the heel of this podcast.
I'm going to shout out my friend Paulo for the third week in a row. He said the same thing, and I don't see how that's possible.
He's just a bad, bad boy.
Oh, shout out Joey Janela. Follow Joey Janela on Twitter. So the Money in the Bank ladder match, based on what I've been reading, has been getting great reception online. I've heard some people calling it the best multi-person ladder match in years.
Wasn't even the best one of this year.
I don't know. I hate to be the negative ones. I'm always preaching positivity, and I love that people enjoyed it. I'm not going to tell anyone not to enjoy it. I found it so forgettable. And Dario, Connor, what do you guys think?
I definitely agree with you. I thought it was it was boring. There was a lack of big moves. There was the RKO, which we've seen off the ladder before. There was Sheamus, Roman Reigns powerbombing Kofi onto the ladder and then Neville on top of him. Other than that, what other big moves really stuck out to you guys?
I'll get to that in a second. Dario, what do you think?
None.
Yeah.
None really stood out to me. To me, the match itself, I thought the one, and I'm going to date myself here, I think there was one at WrestleMania.
Yep.
I thought that one was...
I thought it was better than this
as one. Good, if not better.
Yeah. Oh, the Intercontinental...
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, that was better than this one. I agree.
I'd have to say that. And again, I don't want to get into the finish itself, but I was looking for a big payoff at the end of it, and I didn't get it. And I don't know whether that was unfair of me, because I look at a lot of things where I'm not happy with the way an ending is done. not realizing that, you know what, that's maybe not the end of the story. That's maybe the middle of the story. Just like how I hated Star Wars 5, The Empire Strikes Back. I hated the way that ended. But you needed that ending before you can get the payoff in 6. I just didn't see the payoff with having Bray Wyatt come in and interfere. And I didn't see the payoff by giving Money in the Bank to Sheamus.
Can I put forth some positives now?
Oh, by all means.
I enjoyed the opening.
You're wrong.
Sorry. I always okay. Sorry. Good. You know, scratch it. I always enjoy the rush, people running up the ladder. I like the idea that at the opening of the match, guys have like a full, you know, to talk in video game terms, they've got a full energy bar so they can charge right up the ladder. One day, I know it'll never happen because fans will riot.
I just want to interrupt for 1 second.
Go
okay,
ahead.
What drove me absolute nuts was at the beginning when you said, you know, one guy would run up, get pulled down by the trunks down. He would run up, he would get pulled down. In the second ladder match, didn't like Ambrose and Rollins do the same thing? And I'm thinking to myself going, guys, did you not watch the opening match? We saw this bit already.
Sure.
Like drop the Abbott and Costello.
Sure. It's a formula for a ladder match. You have to have that.
I like
you have to have 10 guys holding on to the belt at once.
One day, I want to see someone pull it off. Like, just someone has the timing just right. No. Literally, like they have someone just win it in the first 2.5 minutes. Fans will riot. It'd be such. I know it's stupid, and I know you should never do something like that just for the sake of doing it. But almost just to show that it's possible, and like something you can refer to for the rest of history. Like, well, back in 2015, this guy.
I like that idea. Have him win it in 2.5 minutes, and then have the other like 5 or 6 members that lost just beat the living crap out of do their spots afterwards,
sure.
And then beat up on each other, kind of thing.
Sure.
And then just have like you know the one guy that didn't win it. Be the only one that able to walk out.
Yeah. It would be interesting. Like, just to mix things up, right? But I thought the beginning was good. I think you guys are neglecting Roman Reigns' crazy moves that he did in that match. He had a wonderful vault to the outside. He just ran towards the rope and straight cleared the top rope. You know, he didn't put his hands on nothing, just cleared it. His athleticism is incredible. And it was a great visual. You know, WWE cameras always catching things at the best angles.
Oh, that's right. Not the Superman punch, but the Superman fly.
There we go.
Okay.
And then the throw. And then he threw Kofi again. Poor Kofi was just, as usual in these things, the bump machine. Got powerbombed again to the outside. I don't know if you guys remember that spot. So that was good. And so one thing I'll say about this match is I really felt it showcased Roman Reigns in a good way, the way that it had been before last year's regrettable Royal Rumble, or this year's regrettable Royal Rumble. And I think he's back on the track. There's still some people booing him, but I think they're just doing it. Anyone booing him, I don't know why you would at this point.
No,
you're doing it just to do it.
Yeah.
Same as you would boo Cena.
Sure. I really feel like he's back on track as far as you showcase him in these multi-man matches, you let him have all the big moments, and then he ends up looking like $1 million. So he's back on track. I like Roman.
Now I have to say I was happy he didn't win, but there was someone like Sheamus is worse.
Hunter, why? let's pretend you're WWE creative. Put yourself so dumb your IQ down by about 100 points, and pretend that you're a WWE creative member. Why did you do it? Why'd you do it, Connor?
Why'd you pick Sheamus?
Yep. Why'd you do it?
I honestly I have no idea. The only thing I can think of is that they're setting him up to lose. When he cashes in. Because the fans aren't behind him. I don't think his character is going over very well.
You know what?
I almost have to disagree with you there.
I think that he has, and I don't know what they look at in terms of popularity. I know we don't value him that much, I'm going to say, on our podcast. But I think he has one of the highest Twitter and Facebook followers of any wrestler. I'm just saying that I think that there is something there in terms of popularity. And again, reiterate how wrong the WWE universe is in terms of what they do and what they stand behind.
It's not just the WWE universe that's wrong. It's how they evaluate the WWE universe's reaction. Like we'll talk about later in the show, but there was also a tag team title change, which as far as we know, was based on Titus O'Neil winning an award that WWE may or may not have invented. I'm sorry, Titus O'Neil. I love you to death, but boy, if it's because of that, you know, Father of the Year award that he won from I don't even remember what organization, you know, we need to have a talk.
Yeah, and again, there's so much that's going on that storyline, but you know, what else can Sheamus do? Like they're going to put him in? Are they going to have? I mean, eventually you're going to have a face as the champion if you're going to have Sheamus go after him.
I like Connor's suggestion that he might cash in and lose. They don't do it too often, The two times that it's been done, I thought were really effective, or at least could have been. I believe it was Cena who, he didn't lose. I think he won by disqualification and thus did not win the belt.
Yeah, that was against CM Punk, and where then, he told him the day before, the week, a month before, he gave him warning.
Which I thought was great. And then Damian Sandow, who had a great match with Cena that should have elevated him at least, you know, as a upper, established him as upper mid carder, and as we all know, is that didn't happen. But, and he also lost. But that was fine. I didn't think it hurt him at all. And I don't think it would hurt Sheamus if he lost to, say, Brock Lesnar.
I think he's going to lose. And this, another reason why, is because they're hyping it up so much. The person is almost guaranteed a victory. They're almost guaranteed to be the next champion. I think they're hyping it up way too much.
They do that every time, though, I think.
I think
they're doing it more this year than they have.
I agree, and I hate that Cole was like, something Kofi, come on Kofi, like Kofi's gonna win the big one or something, or someone was going out, Neville or Kofi, one of the, you know, mid card guys, he's gonna win Neville. The big one, and I'm like, it's not the actual title, this, you're not winning the big one, the big one is the title. I know we think of the briefcase as a guarantee, but you can't use the same calls you would use for the title as you would for a friggin briefcase. I did not enjoy that at all.
Which again, if he is set up to lose, like right now we're thinking, because we can't see the forest for the trees, then again, I have to ask in terms of what I tweeted out, why? Like, what are you doing to his character? You're not helping his character in any way. Like, I get now, you know, like the whole Roman Reigns thing, as much as I don't like it, I'm going to, you know, close one eye and say, okay, you know, show me where you're going to go with this. Show me where this match, you know, if it comes out to a series of great matches, if it now finally pushes Roman Reigns past the crowd, past the universe into being a true face, which what this company really needs is as good a face as you can get out there, then yeah, I can say, look back and go, okay, you know what, that was necessary to do on Money in the Bank. But if it doesn't go anywhere at Sheamus, then why bother?
The funny thing is, it could actually lead to it could have led to a really fun feud between Sheamus and Reigns, who I think could put on great matches. But Sheamus's win was almost secondary to the interference of Bray Wyatt, who is now going to feud with Reigns, while Sheamus goes on to feud with
ooh,
someone he's never feuded with before, of course. Someone he's never wrestled before.
Oh, no. Not him again.
If the events of Raw, we'll get to Raw later, but if the events of Raw are any indication.
The Viper!
The Viper and Sheamus again. I joked about this on Twitter. This is our modern Ric Flair Steamboat, but times like 20, because, you know, Flair and Steamboat were known for a trilogy of matches. Sheamus and Wharton have
maybe a century of matches.
I was maybe 300 times they wrestled each other, and that's not even counting house shows. Imagine the four people who go to these house shows and have seen them. Boy, and again, I don't want to harp on it too much. We will get to that later. So we're in agreement that the opener was somewhat underwhelming, which is a shame because these guys sacrificed their bodies and certainly put in the effort, but something was missing, you know?
It was, and like I said, maybe it wasn't the match to be the payoff match for. Right, I look back in it. The best way I can describe it is Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan went so much hell and got beat up so much time, and almost to the point where it got ridiculous, where we knew every week he was getting beat up. But that WrestleMania match when he beat Triple H and then made it to the finals in the triple threat, when he won that match, it was like, for somebody that wasn't a big wrestling fan, my girlfriend at the time, she followed the Daniel Bryan story, and that WrestleMania, like, she had tears, and I looked and I went, okay, that's the payoff. And that was worth all the other crap that you went through for the 8 months of him getting beat up, going, this is boring. But it does build up that momentum kind of thing. And I went, okay, you know what? This storyline really worked. So back to Roman Reigns. If it is the buildup of something, then yes, I'll take it.
Connor, do you see that light at the end of the tunnel?
I think it'll all come to an end. Next year's WrestleMania, I think it's going to be a rematch between Reigns and Lesnar for the title, and I think Reigns is going to get it there. I think that's the end of the tunnel.
Are you excited about that? Is that a good thing?
I'm neutral about it. I haven't been sold on Reigns yet.
You're too young to be so jaded. Too young and too beautiful.
But when we had the Shield versus the Wyatt family, those were some of the best matches I remember seeing it.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to a Wyatt-Reigns kind of rehash of that.
Yeah, their first match they had last year was atrocious. They had a match just last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever the Roman Reigns, you know, whatever the Roman Reigns episode was, which I thought was much, much better. And I think a third encounter will be, I think they're learning, and I'm absolutely optimistic about the feud. I think that it could be a good one, so good for them. Let's move on a little bit, just touch upon a couple of mid-card matches here. Paige versus Nikki Bella for the Divas title. Thoughts, gentlemen?
I was happy that it was a long match. They actually did a very good job
at
selling the moves, and there were some good moves.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki showed her athleticism I didn't know she had. The ending was... I'm sick of the ending.
It was it was the funniest use of Twin Magic I've seen yet. And I hate... I think Twin Magic is the dumbest thing. But when she started taking the tissues out of her bra, it was hilarious. Okay, I'm not going to hate on that. That was very funny.
That was, like I said, it was one of the better diva matches of this year by far. Again, not happy with it. And it wasn't... I can't even talk anymore. We all knew what was going to happen.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There was no surprise.
No.
I think, let me clarify that. There was a surprise. How can she not win by disqualification? I still don't know.
She still doesn't win the title, though.
I know she still doesn't win the title, but they muffed up the call. Thankfully, the announcers corrected it properly. But yeah, again, it was one of those things like, oh, please don't. We all know you're going to do this. Why?
Yeah, I think that was a genuine referee mistake, actually, because, again, something I read online, people were saying it was almost sort of a reference to the Dusty finish, the famous Dusty Rhodes Dusty finish, where it looks like the hero wins the match and the title, but actually only ends up winning by disqualification, and thus the bad people get to walk away with their prize. So I think the referee may have made a mistake, probably was supposed to signal for disqualification. Either way, as Connor mentioned, the meaning was the same. But you're right, though. It was one of those little details that probably could have just made the storyline a little bit stronger. But good effort overall. And as we've all said, the best Divas match we've seen in a while. And so good for Paige and Nikki. They made use of their time for sure.
Can we just follow that? Because I don't think we're going to talk too much about it more. But what happened on Raw with the Divas?
I found Paige standing up on that chair and giving a speech so adorable, especially since she's already the tallest diva, I think. She looked like she was about 7 feet tall.
Let me ask somebody who doesn't have blinders on. Connor, what did you think?
I thought it was kind of lame, to be honest.
Thank you.
Oh, it was lame, but it was adorably lame.
Paige, that was my bathroom moment.
Paige is kind of a dork. That's the thing. That's kind of what I love about her, amongst the other things. But she is kind of a dork, and I think that's cool, and I think that her, trying to rally the troops it's a decent storyline. I think we know where it's leading. Something you guys have been advocating for a while as far as where she should get her backup from.
Yes. Oh, I wonder do you think it's going to go there?
The way they're building up the story, it's the only logical way to go. She's looking for backup.
Hold on. You said logical and like WWE in the same sentence. Like, seriously.
Oh, she's going to get a bunch of former TNA knockouts, and Christy Hemme is going to come in. And, and some divas. I think Ashley.
If you're
going to
go that far, let's bring back Stacey Keibler.
Stacey Keibler.
Nobody could enter a ring like she could, man.
She's too busy being a gold digger.
Yeah. Hey, whoa. She's a professional, buddy. She has her own jobs.
That was uncalled for.
Totally uncalled for.
Because she could be digging my gold any day.
All right. But yes, I think.
Except I don't
have
gold.
We're alluding to a possible NXT. Massive NXT upgrade, her bringing in maybe Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Bayley, two of those, some combination of all of them, we don't know, Becky Lynch. And again, I'm against it only because I feel it's a short-term solution, but anything that brings those talented women up to the main roster is a good thing. So I think
it's got to be Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I think she's got to be the first one called up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think she's the best one down there.
Well, like I said, we'll see in terms of what happens, but yeah, hopefully something that, and again, at least it's giving it time. It may start off being lame as we, but at least there's a change there. At least we see them trying to do something.
Yep.
And so I'll ease off on the WWE criticism about that.
But more of what we saw at Money in the Bank, please, WWE. The other mid-card match I want to talk about, which I'm sure you guys want to gloss over, Ryback Big Show.
They fought
for the IC title. Yes, and guys, it wasn't bad.
You know what? There's one thing that entered my mind.
Go.
That I want to say. Again, with the finish with Miz coming in, I like the dynamic. I can't stand the dynamic of Ryback Monster versus Big Show Monster again.
I know. This isn't the 1980s. In the 1980s, that would have been million-dollar match.
The fact that they're throwing in the Miz, who doesn't fit in from a physical standpoint into this match. And I think he's going to make it interesting. I'm actually interested in watching a three-way match between them, because this isn't bad guy Miz, bad guy Show against good guy Ryback. This is, I don't care about the other two. I don't care about the other two. I don't care about the other two. And that's phenomenal.
I don't like The Miz at all, but I will say he immediately makes this feud far more palatable than it would be if it was just Ryback and Big Show. And I thought the ending made so much sense because Big Show had interfered in a Miz, you know, Ryback. They were supposed to have a title match a few weeks ago, and Big Show interfered. So, again, logic. There was logic in the booking. Guy, I'm scared, too. It was a logical, well-booked ending. And some of the moves in the match were pretty decent, too. So, not a bad effort. And, sorry, guys, I'll stop in a second. But anyone who keeps chanting, please retire, or whatever it is, to Big Show, you should be friggin' ashamed of yourselves. It's fine not to like a guy, and it's fine to boo, and it's fine to have no reaction. Sit on your hands, don't clap. For them to say that Big Show should retire is so disrespectful, regardless of how you feel about his work. He's a great character person, as far as we know. Does not cause incidents backstage. He's one of the most talented big men I've ever seen. Arguably the most talented big man of all time. And I can't stand people saying he should retire. Okay, that needs to stop. And it was only a little bit at Money in the Bank. I could tell it was like a small group, and I think they got drowned out pretty quickly. But anyone who's doing it, it's just enough. It's sickening.
Sorry, Alex.
Okay. That's where you were. I couldn't reach you, eh?
I'm off.
You're alive there.
I'm off my soapbox. I've got my tissues. I wipe my
eyes. There's still a number of people ahead of Big Show that need to retire first.
Sure. And we say that out of the deepest respect.
Either. Yes.
Two guys who should not retire anytime soon. Segway. John Cena and Kevin Owens. Go ahead. Who wants to talk about this first, this rematch?
It was another great match.
It was.
It was another great match. I didn't think it lived up to the first one.
No. First one was better.
There was a lot of the exact same moves. It was basically the same match, just repackaged.
Sure. And just maybe more. Like, maybe more moves. It was hurt by being so close to the first match. There's no question about it. We didn't even have time to digest their first match, which was so good. You know, let that simmer for a couple of months, but for 2 weeks, and then, like you said, to do such to do such a similar match so soon, it just couldn't match that level of intensity. But they've certainly worked their butts off.
And I think everyone who is smart knew what the ending was gonna happen, like what was gonna happen. Not John Cena winning. I thought Kevin Owens was going to win again.
I told everyone John Cena would win clean in the rematch, just for the record. I believe it's on tape.
I thought it might have been actually a bit of a disqualification. But I still liked the match. I still think it was the best match of the night.
Yes.
Even though we did see it two weeks earlier, even though it was the same one, I still think it was the best match of the night. I still think they told an incredible story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy with how it finished.
As I was saying, after the match.
Sorry, were you talking when
match.
I interrupted you the first time?
After the match with the beatdown of Cena and injuring Cena, I knew it was going to happen because Cena wasn't booked to be in Battleground. That's the only logical explanation for it. He gets injured by Owens. I saw it coming. I don't know about you guys.
How great does that, what do we call that? The
power bomb
look. Oh, I love it. I just love, you know, it doesn't mean if you're doing a big guy, a small guy, it just looks so...
Zayn sold it a lot better than Cena did, though.
Yes. But the way Cena hit, it looked so... That's the thing, is the way Cena hit, it looked so real.
It didn't look like a move.
It didn't look like a move. It looked like a move. It looked like, his back really smacked into that service, and like, he can't even sell it properly because I think he legitimately just kind of like...
And sorry.
Which powerbomb was worse, him powerbombing Cena or powerbombing MJK off off the stage last night?
Oh, R.I.P. Machine Gun Kelly.
What did Heath Slater call him? Shotgun Joe.
Oh, I miss Heath Slater now. Now, I'm getting all emotional this episode.
Sorry, right, you skimmed over something, and I interrupted you, so I'm going to apologize by actually segueing back into something you said,
yep.
Connor.
Oh, my head just.
I know me apologizing.
No, everything there.
Hell, does that ever say?
Please just go.
You mentioned that you knew he was going to be part of Battleground.
Yes.
How do you know that?
I read it online.
Okay, and any reason behind it? Sorry.
Pardon?
Any reason as to why he wasn't booked for?
Because they want to set it up for SummerSlam for the rematch, for the rubber match.
Oh, so what you're saying then is that they do listen to our podcast and we say this was too soon.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do it immediately on the next pay-per-view. They're going to delay it one.
But the next pay-per-view is 5 weeks away, which is a long time when you think about it.
But
everything's
good.
Been
if they
2 weeks.
If they could delay it even long, like they shouldn't wrestle again, honestly, 3 months minimum. That's what I would say.
It's going to be SummerSlam.
They'll probably do it on Raw. They'll probably give it away for free, knowing these goons. Another good match, another match of the night candidate. And it's been a great feud, so I definitely won't complain about it. Matching the, you know, the freshness of their first meeting was going to be impossible anyway, but another great effort. Before we get to the main event, I also want to touch upon the tag team championship match and just ask, you guys were asking why Sheamus, why take the belts off New Day, one of the hottest acts they have right now? I did not understand that.
You know, I thought about that, and we started talking about how we enjoy the, how the primetime players have come back, especially Titus O'Neil, and how impressive he's been in the last couple of times we've seen him. I think has gone over so big that they don't need a belt. Is it a reward? I don't know.
I don't agree with that.
See, I'm looking at it the situation where you're going to have the best thing for the New Day right now is to have a stronger tag team division. And the stronger the tag team division, the more sense it makes. You go back to the times when we did have strong tag teams, when you had the Hardys going against Edge and Christian, going against the Dudley Boys. That was like one of the prime time of tag team wrestlings. And I think that's what you need to do. You need to build up believability that there's two or three tag teams or four that can be in the mix at any time. And I think they need to do that by promoting the primetime players.
But what happened to the chase? I think you can just see, I'm of the thought that you can have guys look strong just by having strong matches. They don't need to win the belt. I just didn't see the sense in their first, in their first encounter, their first serious encounter with the New Day to beat them. It, I don't know. It's, for me, that's the opposite. I think it makes everyone look weak when the belts can be exchanged that easily. Connor?
Yeah, I agree with you with that one. I think it was too, I don't know if too soon for the New Day to give it up. I just think it was too, wasn't a good team to give it to. Like, I understand the New Day losing. They, like Pop said, they don't need the belts right now, really. But why the primetime players? They're not, I don't think they're right for the job right now.
I think, well, there's what other team is there? And the only thing I go back to is Cesaro and Kidd, they're no more. With the injury, he's gone, mm-hmm. what, 9 months, 10 months, a year maybe? Mm-hmm. Which is a sad, sad thing.
Where is Harper and Rowan?
Where are they?
I don't know. Probably cannon fodder for the upcoming Reigns Wyatt feud, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand what you guys are saying. I just think I would have liked to, why couldn't they win it at Battleground? Why couldn't they win it at SummerSlam? I don't know. Like, it's just a little bit more of a chase, because I didn't feel anything for the primetime players. And I like them both. I like Darren Young and I like Titus O'Neil. And I didn't feel like, oh, thank goodness they finally got it. I was like, oh, well, the title's changed hands. And again, yay. It's like this, it must be, I don't know how many times it's changed hands over the course of this year, but I don't think anyone has held the belt for more than a couple of months.
Could it be, and I'm just throwing this out there, bigger than the tag team? The reason being has nothing to do with New Day, has nothing to do with primetime players. Could just be the fact that no other, if I'm not mistaken, no other title change hands at that pay-per-view.
But then why does it need to? Can't you have a, I'm fine with events where titles don't change hands.
I don't know. I think you wind up drawing a bigger attention when a title does change hands.
That's fine, but you get that. See, for me, that's a short term reaction.
You know, should have Ryback have lost?
No, I'm saying nobody should have lost their belts. Can't the belts have value? You know, can't the belts be allowed to go upwards in value?
As when was there? That should be interesting. When was the last time there was a pay per view where a belt didn't? One belt didn't change hands.
I don't know. I imagine it'd be a long time from now. I'd imagine it'd be a long time, but my memory is not great when it comes to that sort of thing.
I'm old. Memory's the first thing to go. So
Taboo
look
Tuesday
here.
In 2006. No, I'm just making that
up. I was going to say, that would have been amazing. Like, Connor had a real Rain Man moment there.
You made things up. You're sounding more and more like the WWE every day.
But you bring up a point about titles not changing hands. And the main event, the World Heavyweight Championship, certainly did not change hands. Though it was very, very close the way they played it out.
Yeah.
Connor didn't seem impressed.
I wasn't impressed by it. I thought it was a very... It was nice to have a 40-minute match, but have 40 minutes worth of content in it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very, very slow at times. I thought the ending, again, was kind of lame. With both guys on the title, and then they both fall.
Oh, it looked good. It looked good, though.
It looked okay.
Well, see, I viewed it differently, but continue.
No, that's it. Well, go ahead, Pop.
For me, it was... I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a bit creative. I look at it, I don't think anybody here expected the title to change hands.
No.
So we and that's really tough to sell the story when you already know what the ending is going to be. I thought they did a good job in terms of doing it close. I thought there were some decent spots in it when Ambrose threw Rollins over the ropes and smashed into the ladder. That got a cringe and pain factor in me. And when Rollins threw Dean Ambrose into the barrier, not twice. Once, but twice.
Twice.
That was quite impressive in terms of the impact and hurt. But yeah, it was one of those things where you knew the match was how it was going to go, and it went that way.
What I wanted to see at the end of that match was Brock Lesnar.
I think a lot of people were hoping for something like that.
I wanted Brock Lesnar to come out, kick the crap out of Dean Ambrose, and say he wants his title back from Rollins.
Disclaimer.
That's what I was hoping for.
Disclaimer. Connor hates Dean Ambrose.
Yes. I'm not a big fan of Dean Ambrose.
But if he did that, wouldn't that launch into a... Maybe you need to launch into a Brock Lesnar, Dean Ambrose, number one contender match kind of thing.
Great. Oh, can you imagine the brutality? Oh, I think it might happen. I could see that match happening.
Brock is already the number one contender.
No, I'm saying in the future. In the future. Not right now.
Well, no. Mind you, he still is owed a title shot.
Who, Brock?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The match felt very long. It was unfortunate that it had to follow up Cena Owens 2, which frankly was almost the real main event, similar to how Hogan and Rock from Mania, I think it was 18. What was the one in Toronto, last one in Toronto?
18, I think it was 18, yeah.
Was the real main event, and then by the time Triple H and Jericho rolled around, there was no chance of them following up that act, and the crowd was somewhat lukewarm for that main event. This was similar. Cena Owens was so hot. The opening match, even though
we didn't... So hot right now.
So hot right now, Cena Owens. Even though the opening match... We might not have loved it. The crowd was definitely into it for the most part. So, they had all their moments of popping for ladder-related moves. And then they had another ladder match at the end. And a match that they've seen many times, by the way, Ambrose and Rollins. They wrestled many, 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 many times. So, it was so hard for them to get into it.
It was new, though.
Mm-hmm.
It was new because there was no J&J security. There was no Kane.
Yes.
There was no authority.
Good point.
So
it was very refreshing.
It was very refreshing in that regard.
Sure. There was a different story to be told, and I think they did the best they could. And I know, again, reading online, some people think the match was fantastic. I found it hard to get into. Clearly, so did the crowd. And I think it should be the end of this Ambrose Rollins thing for the time being, though I know it's a well that they can always go back to. Really, we mentioned Cena Owens. The best segment of the night might have been the Dusty Rhodes tribute, which they replayed on Raw, I think, but...
Yes.
And they replayed... Well, they first showed it in the pre-show to Money in the Bank.
Oh, is that right? Okay, see, I didn't see that. Okay.
So they showed it...
Showed it a couple of times
in the last 2 days.
It was a great, great, great tribute, and I was happy they did it. So, sadly, that might have been the strongest part of the show, with Cena Owens, of course. Credit to Cena Owens. But overall, guys, I didn't think Money in the Bank was bad.
No, and even that final match was...
I didn't think it was bad. It was just... It was okay.
Sure.
It wasn't good. It wasn't bad.
It was.
I'm on the fence. I'm kind of neutral about it.
It was the kind of pay-per-view that you look back and compare and go, wow, this other one here was really good.
Yeah.
This one, you can't say that.
Now, we touched upon a couple of things. Let's just move on to just a little bit of Raw talk to close out. Machine Gun Kelly getting murdered by Kevin Owens.
Keep saying murdered.
A little bit of background. The show was in Cleveland, Ohio yesterday. Machine Gun Kelly is a rapper who is a Cleveland native, or an Ohio native, but I think
that's what they call it.
He's a Clevelander.
I have to be honest, I turned it off and watched the end of the Jays game and the end of the hockey game during Machine Gun Kelly.
I was doing other things, so I stuck with it only because I had a weird feeling that something might happen. And sure enough, something did. Now, did you catch the end of the segment?
Yeah, I saw the Kevin Owens part.
Go ahead. What did you think happened there, Connor?
I thought it was interesting. I don't know why, what the purpose of him coming out was. I liked that he did. And I liked how Machine Gun Kelly initiated it by pushing him. And then the kick, I think he was supposed to kick into the powerbomb, and he just kicked him right over.
Yeah, yeah. For anyone who doesn't know and has never seen Machine Gun Kelly, he looks like he weighs about 95 pounds. He's very thin.
He's a toothpick.
So, and Kevin Owens is pushing, looks like he's pushing almost 3 bills. So when a guy like that kicks you, even if it's a worked kick, as it were, if you don't know how to take it, you're going to do what Machine Gun Kelly did, which was just fall on your butt.
Yeah.
And then what happened, Connor?
And then he proceeded to pick him up and throw him off the stage with a powerbomb onto a cushion.
Of course, yeah, thankfully. Now, it didn't look like Machine Gun Kelly knew exactly how to take... He's not a trained wrestler, obviously. And if you look at the screenshots, it's really not a textbook powerbomb. It kind of looks like he has Machine Gun Kelly on his on one shoulder and just literally just whips him.
And he was just kind of flailing the entire
time. Flailing the whole time. Maybe he was having second thoughts or his just survival instincts kicked in.
Kevin Owens never said anything.
There's something online about why Kevin Owens said, I didn't read that. I'm sure it's
doesn't like rap music.
He doesn't like rap music.
I would do the same thing.
That's another thing to like Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, hey, speak for yourselves.
So I didn't say anything bad.
Okay.
I didn't say, like, you know, rap music really isn't any form of music at all.
Oh,
I didn't say anything like that.
Rap, R.I.P. Kurt Hennig and the, what was Kurt Hennig? Do you remember that?
No.
In WCW? We might have to close out the show with this clip. We'll negotiate this later. But Kurt Hennig, and this is during a very terrible time in WCW when they were doing anything for mainstream attention. And they brought in Master P. Do you guys remember Master P?
Oh,
the
rapper? Yes.
And the No Limit Soldiers. And apparently paid all of them a fat sum just to jump around and not actually wrestle. And then Kurt Hennig countered by creating a group, the Southwest Rednecks, sorry if I'm getting that wrong, of wrestlers. And they recorded a song called Rap is Crap, which actually started getting played on some country music stations down south. And, you know, WCW is a southern-based promotion. So Kurt Hennig and the guys were supposed to be the bad guys, but they started getting cheered way more than the No Limit Soldiers. And I think then WCW just nixed the whole feud, unfortunately, because it wasn't going the way they wanted it to.
That's really got to suck when you have to actually close a feud or a promo because the bad guy's doing so well back then.
Yeah, yeah. Another.
Now they're learning how to roll with it, which is
sure.
Cool.
And the other thing we want to mention was, we talked about it, Brock Lesnar. So, yes, we would have liked to see Brock Lesnar come back at Money in the Bank, but he did show up last night. Gentlemen, your thoughts?
You got to know it was coming. Who else is going to be the number one contender that's going to name out of nowhere to beat the crap out of Rollins?
Oh, I agree that it was known. I mean, I think we all, you know, read previews in terms of what was happening.
It was very nice to see him, though.
But to me, I find it underwhelming. Number one, the reason why I like Brock Lesnar coming back is because I get to hear Paul Heyman talk. We didn't get that. So, you know, okay, they're wetting the tongue a little bit longer, making me wait. Fine, I'll be that way. But, you know, no F5, not even a punch.
The reason behind that, I think, he wasn't originally booked until next week's Raw. And they just brought him in this week. So I don't think anything was really planned. And they just kind of brought him out.
Yeah, and I mean, we all recall in terms of how he left when he went, quote unquote, psycho and destroyed everybody there.
Loved it.
That might have been something there. But I think one thing that we haven't talked about, and this is not to do with Brock, but with Seth, what's going on with Seth and J&J and Kane and Authority? I always thought that this was a marriage that was going to get back together. Everybody's, oh, yeah, you know, you're the guy, you know, we're going to stick behind you. And, you know, Seth Rollins to go, yeah, you know, I'm better with, you know, my team behind me. That's what I'm expecting to happen. But that's not going on right now. What do you guys think that's going to turn into?
Did you
into?
Really expect that?
I did. I like the alienation.
Did you watch his opening promo, Connor?
Rollins?
Did you manage to catch his opening promo?
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious. I want to thank Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins. I thought it was so funny.
Do you want to know where I think they're going with it?
Please.
I think they're going to make him realize that he needs the authority. But have Lesnar kicking his ass. But I think they're also going to bring Sheamus in to the authority to be their guy now, just to rub it in Seth's face until he wants to go back to them.
I can see that. Do you make Seth lose the belt in the process? Or do they wind up as teaching him his lesson while he still keeps the belt?
I think it'll be a disqualification. At SummerSlam, I don't think Brock's going to win at SummerSlam.
You mean Battleground?
Well, who's he facing him at Battleground?
The match is at Battleground. Unfortunately.
So it's going to be disqualification, Authority. I don't know. I'm lost. I thought it was going to be a SummerSlam match. Must be the rematch.
I wish it should. They should wait till SummerSlam.
It must be the rematch, though.
Well, I would assume they will. Like you said, maybe disqualification at Battleground and then rematch at SummerSlam.
Yeah,
Having the title change it. Battleground, if that's the way it goes, would be madness.
Yeah.
The other thing I can see in terms of happening is you have the match at Battleground and you have Sheamus interfere. Not cash in, but have Sheamus interfere.
And tease.
Costing Brock Lesnar the match.
Okay.
Seth Rollins still is champion. Seth Rollins then becomes where he needs the authority. Brock Lesnar doesn't go after the belt immediately. He goes after who cost him it, and there's a feud set up between him and Sheamus for a couple of pay-per-views until they branch into new storylines, and then either Brock goes back for the title or Sheamus winds up cashing at that point. But I think there's going to be a Sheamus Brock Lesnar kind of feud maybe in there.
I hope you're wrong.
I'm okay with it. I think they would have a great hard-hitting match. I'm down for that.
The only question is then who takes over as the number one contender? Because we still really haven't had Reigns Seth Rollins, have we?
They did one-on-one once, and then, which was hilarious, they were supposed to wrestle on pay-per-view, and then they ended up wrestling on Raw the 6 days before. I don't remember why. And then Reigns got injured, I think. Do you remember that, his first injury? That put him on the shelf for a while. It's very confusing. So, yes, they've wrestled one-on-one before. Thankfully, it was on a Raw, which probably nobody remembers. But the fact that they even did was a bit of a waste. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only thing I haven't thought of is who would Seth Rollins face then at that point.
All right, guys, just to close out, just some quick questions here and observations from Raw. I was watching New Day versus Primetime Players and Neville. Would you say that Neville's Red Arrow is the second most popular finisher in the company next to the RKO? Think carefully. Take a minute. Take a minute.
I think you just stole my answer. That's the only thing right now that prevents me from putting it high, is that it takes a minute to set up.
Yes, it does.
Which means you really have to ask a lot of the guy to stand there, almost as Smash Wrestling did when the guy kind of fell off. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Dan O'Hare, we love you.
I wasn't going to mention the name. That's on you. That's on you, Big Al. That's on you. But the only thing is that, look, I'm glad that they take the time. I want to make sure that a move like that gets off properly. My only problem is that it takes him a minute to get up onto that top turnbuckle and get himself prepared.
I would also like to see him hit someone in the middle of the ring, not in that far corner.
Oh, boy.
I want to see how far he can go.
That's a lot to ask.
He saw it a little bit.
You have no regard for human life. As Kevin Harlan would say, you have no regard for human life.
Oh, no, but I see where you're going with that. Like, I mean, how many people do frog splashes?
In the middle of the ring.
How many people do an Eddie Guerrero frog splash?
Because
the way he sells that and the arms, the projection, and how far. Yeah. No, yeah. I see where you're going with that. Again, might be a lot more asking. We're not the ones taking the bumps and bruises. But yeah, definitely.
Did anyone come out of this show looking stronger than they did before? I bring this up.
Money in the Bank or Raw?
Raw. I'll give you a quick recap here of some of the things that happened. Like, Sheamus was lost to a roll-up to Ambrose, continuing the tradition of Money in the Bank winners looking like fools right after they win it. R-Truth rolled up King Barrett and beat him in like 5 seconds. And then King Barrett knocked him out with a bullhammer. Big Show and Miz ended in a countout. Do you feel anyone was benefited by the booking on Raw this week? Besides Kevin Owens killing Machine Gun Kelly. Just saying, it makes me smile and laugh. Sorry, Machine Gun Kelly.
Other than Brock?
Did he even come out looking stronger than before?
I think he did.
No.
Didn't lose anything.
You know what I'm saying, Pop,
right? No, nobody gained anything. I think a few people lost. I think Barrett lost.
Boy, what do you think he did? Here's my question. What do you think he did? There has to be a story here.
For as much as he's getting...
I'll call him.
As much as he's getting pooped on, like, it was like, you know, did he lift Stephanie McMahon's skirt? I don't know. like, it looks like something of that nature.
I'm not saying he should be the world champion or anything or in the main event, but geez Louise, he's a talented performer. And I have no idea why they've chosen to squander his talents for this long.
And, I mean, R-Truth is funny.
Yes.
But I don't think any quote-unquote king has fallen so fast. I could be wrong, but I don't remember a king falling as fast as he did.
And to keep talking about R-Truth, why did they try to do it again this week? It was good one-off.
What is... And now they're trying to...
He came out and thought he was commentating, but he was in the match.
I thought that was okay.
I was like, oh,
it wasn't as funny
man.
As last week, obviously.
Again, it's one of those things like, is there something more coming? Is this going to be part of his character? And then what's the reason behind it?
I think it's all worth it if it leads to the return.
Of Jimmy?
Of little Jimmy. And I think that... Guys, we're not breaking any stories here. I'm not saying I heard anything, but I think that's a fine way to end our show. Little Jimmy Oh, no. Should we?
Yeah, I wanted to
touch
on that.
Is that a fine way to end our show?
Huh?
Is that a fine way to end our show?
No, it's not a fine way to end our show at all, but I think it's worth noting that one of the wrestlers that we see on Smash Wrestling the last few times you come out there, Josh Alexander, the Walking Weapon, has unfortunately announced his retirement. I've been watching Twitter and Facebook over the last few days.
Twitter.
Twitter. I'm old. I don't really know what it's called. Tweeting, Twitter. Twitter just sounds like such an insult to say. But the story is he has one more match. I believe it's July 12th that's coming up. And I think it's for A1 or Superkick. I'm not sure which promotion it is. And from reading about it, I kept saying that, you know, oh, I went, oh, wow, you know, it's sad to see. Apparently, he has a lot of neck injuries, which you start going, ooh. And then you start feeling sad for asking for one more match. You keep asking for matches because obviously. So, Mr. Alexander, best of health to you and your decision. Hope everything works out the way you want it to.
Yeah, Josh is one of the Smash Wrestling performers who got me into the promotion as far as the quality of his matches. And, you know, maybe we can talk about this more on another show. I don't want to take up too much time, but just to echo what Dara said, best wishes to him. I know he recently had a child, I believe, last year.
That's correct.
So if he's taking his time off to spend, you know, for his health and to spend more time with his family, more power to him. Thank you so much, Josh. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will catch you all later. Keep watching wrestling on TV. Support independent wrestling always. And we will see you next week. And despite how we're going to go out, rap is not crap. Okay? Rap is not crap.
That is your opinion.
I like country music, I love country girls, I like Willie Nelson, and don't forget about Merle. There's only one thing that I hate, cause it's a bunch of crap. I hate rap. I like NASCAR racing, Richard Petty's still the king. Yeah, they call me a redneck, but you know that's a beautiful thing. There's only one thing that I hate, cause it's a bunch of crap. I hate rap. There's only one thing that I hate, cause it's a bunch of crap. I